Palestinians out of their land and steal it for themselves. And the antics of someone like Ben-Gvir will make it increasingly difficult, I might go so far as to say impossible, for Israel's defenders to pretend something else is going on.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to end it there. Joe Cutrone, U.S. Coordinator, Sami Doun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. Elijah Magner, thank you so much. Journalist and political analyst from Brussels. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Vitale and the team. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Security Council stresses the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after an Israeli minister visited the site in occupied Al-Quds. Russia announces a 36-hour truce in Ukraine starting on Friday, urging Kiev to take a similar step. The U.S. House of Representatives fail again to elect a speaker as Republicans remain divided on Kevin McCarthy's bid. Our top story, the UN Security Council has voiced concern over the status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after a far-right Israeli minister visited the site and occupied Al-Quds earlier this week.
On 3rd January, Israel's new Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, conducted a visit accompanied by heavy security detail to the holy site in Jerusalem. The visit was the first to the site by an Israeli minister since 2017. While the visit was not accompanied or followed by violence, it is seen as particularly inflammatory given Mr. Ben-Gvir's past advocacy for changes to the status quo.
Security Council members reaffirmed the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They met on Thursday as anger boils among Palestinians over the Israeli minister's visit. They see such visits as provocations aimed at turning the mosque into a Jewish temple. And that's because the decades-old status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound allows only Muslims to worship there. Palestinians want the Security Council to take action.
What red line does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? When are you going to act? It has displayed utter disregard for the sanctity of Palestinian life the sanctity of international law and the sanctity of Al-Haram al-Sharif. It does so with absolute contempt.
The Palestinian envoy also said Israel's actions have nothing to do with religious freedom and aim to change the identity of Al-Aqsa. Israel's envoy to the UN was also present at the Security Council meeting. Gilad Erdan defended the minister's visit to Al-Aqsa, saying it was in line with the status quo. The U.S., meanwhile, voiced concern over unilateral acts that increase tensions. The Israeli minister's visit sparked anger from other countries, including Muslim nations as well. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest place in Islam. Meanwhile, Iran has warned against Al-Aqsa Mosque violations by Israeli officials and settlers, saying such moves will have serious consequences for the fake Tel Aviv regime. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark in a phone call with the Secretary General of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, Hassan Brahim Taha. Iran's top diplomat called for the establishment of a legal international mechanism to stop sacrilegious acts against sacred places and religious sanctities. The OIC chief, for his part, strongly condemned the latest violations of Al-Aqsa Mosque by a right-wing Israeli minister. He said such provocations by Israel undermine peace and stability in West Asia. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnea believes that storming Al-Aqsa Mosque by an Israeli far-right minister can spark another intifada. Let's take a quick listen to that.
I think this is a continuous provocation from the Israeli sides that will never learn from history. In the year 2000, Ariel Sharon stormed Al-Aqsa and created the second intifada. In 2009, again, the internal security minister, Yitzhak Aharonovich, and Avigdor Lieberman stormed Al-Aqsa and went into the Holy Mosque. And then now again, we see Ben-Gvir, because there are no accountability, because the Arabs are normalizing with the Israelis, because Turkey has returned the ties with Israel and re-accepted the Israeli minister. Israel is going to continue violating the right of the Palestinians, continue refusing to give the Palestinian back their land, continue refusing to give a state to Palestine, and perhaps that will help the Palestinians to unite against the Israelis once for all.
The first international conference on Marta Soleimani's School of Thought has wrapped up in the Iranian capital, Tehran, organized in honor of the assassinated general. The two-day conference shed light on different aspects of his lifestyle and philosophy. Gisu Mishahmadi has more.
Veteran Iranian politicians were present alongside foreign activists, scholars, and researchers on the second and final day of the first international conference on Martyr Soleimani's School of Thought. Panel discussions shed light on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's life and legacy.
You have to live with people like Martyr Soleimani to understand why they chose that certain lifestyle. Not only that, but even more important is how they choose to die. This makes people like Martyr Soleimani stand out.
According to the participants of the conference, Martyr Soleimani had a deep understanding of politics and based his views on the guidelines of the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. They say this is the most important reason why he should always be remembered.
It is our national duty to keep the memory of Martyr Soleimani alive. He is a role model for future generations, and we need to elaborate on his school of thought for the next generation to walk down the same path.
My husband is in prison in our country, the Republic of Azerbaijan, since 2011, when he was sentenced to 12 years in prison for protesting against a ban on hijab. He was inspired by Martyr Soleimani. It is very important to introduce Martyr Soleimani to the world and the younger generation.
The plight of the Palestinians was another topic high on the agenda.
This conference is of great importance because one of the major goals of Martyr Soleimani was to liberate Palestine, and this is also one of the major issues that was pointed out in the panel discussion. It has also been mentioned in the final statement of the conference.
Eight panels separately focused on different dimensions of Martyr Soleimani's school of thought, from his personal life to his teachings and great leadership skills. However, his views regarding international politics received more attention.
I think we can highlight 3 points. One deals with the role that General Soleimani had in stopping U.S. hegemonic designs for the Middle East. The second point was his ability to organize people, to create networks of like-minded people. He was a religious man. He was an ethical man. He was someone that attracted people, and that was one of the reasons that he was successful.
While the organizers of the conference have decided to set up a permanent secretariat, they say they are open to receiving more research papers, projects, and books for the next conference, which will be focusing more on the legacy of a man who is known for making great efforts in eradicating insecurity in the region. Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani fought for peace, security, and stability in the region. According to the participants of this conference, his greatest legacy and achievement was eliminating Daesh terrorists. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
In other news, Russia announces a ceasefire in Ukraine, calling on Kiev to do the same, to let people attend services on Orthodox Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. The Kremlin says the truce will hold from noon on Friday until Saturday midnight local time. The announcement comes hours after Turkey's president called on Moscow to declare a, quote, unilateral ceasefire. Recep Tayyip Erdogan made the request in a phone call with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. The Russian president says Moscow is open to serious talks over Ukraine if Kiev accepts the, quote, new territorial realities. Putin has also censured the West for playing a destructive role in the Ukraine war by arming Kiev and providing it with intelligence. Ukraine says Russia's declaration of a ceasefire over Orthodox Christmas is, quote, hypocrisy. It says Russia must leave the territories it has captured before any temporary truce. Moving on to the United States now, where the House of Representatives fail for the third time to elect a speaker.
No member-elect, having received a majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
The stalemate comes as House Republicans remain divided on Kevin McCarthy's bid. He's the Republican leader at the lower chamber of the U.S. Congress. A group of 20 hardline Republicans are refusing to give him the 218 votes necessary to win the post. They say they don't trust McCarthy to fight for the restrictions they want to impose on President Joe Biden and the Democratic-held Senate. McCarthy has offered concessions to his opponents to get their votes. The House will now meet again later on Friday to elect a speaker. The stalemate has caused dysfunction unseen at the House since 1860.
In November 2022, the Republican Party won the majority of votes to the House of Representatives. They vowed to go after Democrats and President Joe Biden, but now cracks have appeared with the party itself. In a historic incident, the GOP failed to nominate the House Speaker. Party leader Kevin McCarthy got just 203 votes in two rounds, less even than Democrat Hakeem Jeffries in the GOP-controlled chamber, and fared even worse, with 202 votes in round three. It went to six rounds, but yet McCarthy could not gain the votes. It was a tumultuous start to the new Congress and pointed to a difficult road ahead with Republicans now in control of the House. A new generation of conservative Republicans, many aligned with Donald Trump's Make America Great Again agenda,
want to upend business as usual in Washington and were committed to stopping McCarthy's rise without concessions to their priorities. It is widely believed that a revolt of ultra-hardliners has dealt a humiliation to McCarthy.
Those of us who will not be voting for Kevin McCarthy today take no joy in this discomfort that this moment has brought. But if you want to drain the swamp, you cannot put the biggest alligator in charge of the exercise.
McCarthy became the first candidate to fall short in a first ballot for Speaker in a century. The impasse means Republicans are unable even to assume the control that they won in the midterms, as the new House can't yet be sworn in. The standoff over McCarthy has been building since Republicans appeared on track to win the House majority in the midterm elections in November. A new generation of Trump-aligned Republicans led the opposition to McCarthy, believing that he's neither conservative enough nor tough enough to battle Democrats.
And they even came to the position where one Matt Gaetz said, I don't care if we go to plurality and we elect Hakeem Jeffries and it hurts the new frontline members not to get reelected. Well, that's not about America, and I will always fight to put the American people first, not a few individuals that want something for themselves. So we may have a battle on the floor, but the battle is for the conference and the country, and that's fine with me.
Well, the standoff risks paralyzing the House and forced the lawmakers to consider another candidate. Republicans flipped the House in their favor with a narrow majority in the 2022 midterm elections, but there are now concerns that the fractures could deal a severe blow to the GOP in Congress and the next presidential election.
While the Senate remains in Democratic hands, House Republicans are eager to confront Biden after 2 years of the Democrats controlling both houses of Congress. But disagreements to choose the House Speaker is an ominous sign for the party and its conservative agenda. Even if McCarthy succeeds to be the Speaker, he'll be a weak figure who may be in office but barely in power. The war, which started with the Tea Party backlash to the Obama administration, is far from over.
We will compromise, but we will not capitulate. And there's a very serious difference. There's 222 Republicans in our conference now. So if 20 people are able to drive this train however they want to, 202 of us might as well go home, because that means they are the conference. That means they those 20 people will be the majority. Well, that is capitulation, and we will not do that. Compromise, yes.
The fractious support for McCarthy is over the direction of the GOP between swing district moderates and conservatives who have taken up the populist agenda of the former President Donald Trump. It is not believed that the chaos highlights the dilemma facing House Republicans.
You have 20 people demanding that 201 surrender to them unconditionally. Well, I will not surrender unconditionally. If you have conditions, give them to us. We'll consider them. Doesn't mean we'll do them, but you have to talk about them. But we've asked and we've asked, what is it you want? What do you need? But you have 20 people demanding the unconditional surrender of, including this group of warriors. We will not unconditionally surrender. Tell us what you want. We might surrender if you tell us the terms.
Analysts say no matter the concessions made to some of those on the far right, they simply will not relent and join other Republicans. The crisis is even more poignant as the party is set to brace for the presidential election set to be held in 2024. It now appears the fractures that Trump created within the Republican Party are deeper than ever before. With Trump still desperate to be elected president, it is unlikely the GOP will be able to unite behind another leader and change its electoral fortunes anytime soon.
That brings an end to our World Bulletin. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard
was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The Limelight.
From rising grocery and utility bills to skyrocketing insurance premiums, warming temperatures from climate change hit American people's wallets hard in 2022. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The website of Truth Out wrote in this regard, climate change is impacting the frequency and severity of heat and cold spells in different parts of the United States. And in 2022, these periods of extremes made it harder for people to afford their home heating and cooling costs. One in six U.S. households are currently behind on their utility bills. Let's start in the winter. Around 90% of U.S. households use either electricity or natural gas as their main source of heat. This past January, average household electricity rates soared by 8%, the highest increase in over a decade. Parts of the U.S. experienced severe cold that month as warming temperatures in the Arctic destabilized the polar jet stream, sending frigid air southward. This winter, the U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that average household heating costs for natural gas will increase by 28%, in part due to forecasted colder-than-average temperatures. This past summer, millions of Americans also dealt with stretches of extreme heat, which strained electric grids and caused household energy and air conditioning bills to skyrocket. The National Energy Assistance Directors Association estimated that Americans' electric bills increased 20% due to the heat waves jumping to an average $540. Low-income families of color, both in urban and rural settings, are being hit the hardest. Black, Latino, and indigenous households in the U.S. are more likely than white households to have their power cut off due to unpaid utility bills. You have to choose between having a normal holiday season or maybe paying this bill or that bill. It's all about survival, said Linnea Jackson, general manager of the Hoopa Valley Tribe's Public Utilities District in Northern California, adding, "Those increased costs are really impacting tribal communities." Jackson says that in addition to higher energy costs from summers and winters, with periods of hotter highs and lower lows, also known as weather whiplash, climate-driven disasters like wildfires, drought, and powerful storms all disrupt service and drive up costs. It's only getting worse. People are struggling to come up with the cost to afford basic electricity, Jackson said. In Bethel, Alaska, Sophie Swoop, a UPIC environmental activist, says that thawing permafrost is causing houses to shift and crack, forcing people to spend more money on heating. Higher fuel costs also weigh heavily on communities like Swoop's, where many essential supplies have to be shipped in. Everything is just so much more expensive, Swoop said. The cost of power itself spiked all over the U.S. That's in large part due to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which drew the scarcity natural gas supply around the world and upped the cost of producing electricity from power plants. The Energy Information Administration estimates that residential customers paid 8% more for electricity on average than in 2021. The war may be the primary cause, but some parts of the U.S. also saw rate hikes due to climate-related extreme events like storms, drought, and wildfires. In June 2022, 1 million customers in Louisiana saw fees added to their bills, as much as $25 for some households, to help the electric utility energy recover costs related to storm damage from hurricanes Laura, Delta, Zeta, and Ida, as well as winter storm Uri in February 2021. In California, customers of the largest utility in the state, Pacific Gas and Electric, or PG&E, started the year off with a rate increase that was driven in part by the cost of wildfire prevention. It didn't end there. Just 2 months later, PG&E bumped its rates again to cover the rising cost of natural gas. The company said it had eaten up a lot of its natural gas supply the previous summer when the drought was limiting hydropower output and had to buy more. The Western Area Power Administration, a federal agency that sells power from government-owned hydropower dams to utilities throughout the West, told Greece that reduced hydropower generation in 2022 due to the mega drought put upward pressure on power rates in some pockets of the Western U.S.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
Of the Islamic Revolution, His Eminence Ayatollah Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei said a while back that today the resistance movement has become more active and more confident as a result of the blessing of the blood of the transnational martyred leader Haj Qasim Soleimani. On the eve of the third anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani, it has become clear and evident that the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani represents a national and international incident, as he has become an idol and a role model for the youth of the region of West Asia and beyond. When I say beyond, I mean it. Seeing photos of Sardar Soleimani as far as Havana, Cuba, and discussing his revolutionary road towards martyrdom in his firm fight against both imperialism and its terrorist offspring Daesh were for me both a miracle and a realization. Martyr Soleimani was both courageous and wise in his struggle for liberation. One example of his wisdom and courage, which the enemies know well but some friends may not know, is that he was able to nullify all the illegitimate plots of the Americans in West Asia with the direct help of the people of the region, or it could be said with the inspiration that he gave to them. This man was able to stand up to all the plots that had been hatched with money, with the vast propaganda efforts of the Americans, with the diplomatic capabilities of the Americans, and with the pressure that they exert on politicians, particularly in countries run by weak puppet regimes. He was able to nullify all the schemes set up with these instruments in West Asia. given that General Qasem Soleimani was not a figure bounded by Iranian geography, but rather a figure that crossed borders of neighboring Arab countries infested by U.S.-backed terrorism. His assassination had repercussions on a regional level. The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani did not achieve the American goals of weakening the axis of resistance. Rather, his martyrdom had a major role in crystallizing what has become known as the Soleimani School. With his martyrdom, Commander Qasem Soleimani created great regional capabilities, all of which pour into the same goal and carry the revolutionary spirit and creative mind that Hash Qasem had founded. Hash Qasem Soleimani is a holistic model with personality and dimensions, especially humanity, which is why today many young people in the Islamic world, especially in this region, are thirsty for heroes like him. That is why he acquired the status of the martyr of the Axis of Resistance, the international martyr, or as Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah put it, the master of the martyrs of the resistance axis. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, Ammar Osman. On the third anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, we remember Shahid Soleimani, who was not a figure limited by Iranian geography, but rather a figure that transcended borders. His main role was confronting the American-Israeli project with all its tools, hence why his assassination had repercussions on both the regional and the international level. The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani did not achieve the American goals of weakening the axis of resistance. Rather, his martyrdom had a major role in crystallizing what has to come to be known as the Soleimani School, as the capabilities of the axis of resistance increased. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Bilal Latqis, academic, researcher, and political commentator. Thank you very much, Dr. Bilal, for being with us on such a special occasion. Now, Martyr Soleimani was committed in his lifetime to Islamic values and the principles of the Islamic Revolution as well, and he bore the suffering of the struggle to achieve these principles and remained loyal to all his duties towards the Iranian people and the Islamic nation as a whole. Those same values are today being attacked by Western liberalism and Western imperialism in an attempt to try to culturally and militarily maybe invade our region and specifically the Islamic Republic of Iran. How has the school of Qasem Soleimani helped stop this invasion, and what can it do to continue to do so?
Good evening to you. On this exceptional anniversary and occasion, the anniversary of the martyrdom of Hash Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we condole our people and bless them at the same time. We condole our Arabic and Islamic peoples and the oppressed people of this world for losing such quality of leaders. We also bless them and congratulate them because we perceive such a martyrdom in the face of an arrogant enemy such as the American regime as a sign of pride and dignity for the person who attains it. And at the same time, it is a great and positive push for the nation and for this person's school of thought. As you mentioned, it is clear that Hash Qasem Soleimani as a person abbreviated an entire school of thought. Perhaps a few martyrs throughout history are known for their martyrdom being an abbreviation and expression of a school of thought. The model of Qasem Soleimani was in fact a symbol for a school of thought. If we contemplate the nature of the past, current and future conflict and contemplate the school of Hash Qasem Soleimani, which, according to our understanding, comes from a source which is the Muhammad Alawi understanding of life, of man, of values, and of the nature of conflict. Anyone who reflects well on this school sees that the origin of it is jihad. Not the military one, but the origin of this school, or the set of origins of this school, from which one of these basic and central origins emerges, is the origin of jihad. But what is meant by jihad here is not direct military jihad. The word jihad is broader and includes all fields and all aspects. Military jihad must be associated with the jihad of statement, clarification, and domination, because military action, according to the Soleimani school, or the credibility of military jihad here, is the last phase that the oppressed can resort to in the face of the arrogant, in order to form awareness and restore the values, culture, vision, and the intellectual system in which one believes. Hajj Qasim believed that the West, led by the American regime, did not want to overthrow its opponents or enemies militarily. In fact, and as confirmed by writings, theories, practice, and experience that we all touched, at least in the first stage of the rise of the American hegemony in World War I, we see that it was always used in military action by the United States of America as a prelude in order to subjugate the opponent and destabilize its values, then later converting its values to the Western system. Like it or not, the military conflict remains an interim conflict, and it is not an extended or continuous conflict. In other words, it is possible for a country to launch a military war, but the result will not be a military one, but rather psychological, cultural, or intellectual. Therefore, the Americans have always, since the First World War and the Second, to all their practices in our region through their direct military presence or through their tools, especially the Zionist entity, they were trying to adapt or change the values, culture, intellectual, and emotional system of this region from the window of military action. Therefore, the Jihad movement for Hajj Qasim Soleimani was a comprehensive title in order to establish values, in order to restore identity, and then in order to display and demonstrate values to the whole world on the basis of equality.
من أجل استعادة الهوية ثم أيضا من أجل عرض وتبيان القيم على العالم كله انطلاقا من الندية.
Professor Bilal, is this why his honesty, his sincerity, the essence of Hajj Qasim Soleimani, his school and his blessed life and martyrdom, is this why he was killed? What was it that made his enemies fear him to a point of assassinating him?
نعم.
You notice, for example, that when we compare or disparage today between the experience or the school that Qasim Soleimani established and which successfully confronted the Americans, as Newsweek reported on its homepage, it says that Soleimani confronted the Americans and at the same time overthrew ISIS. Therefore, we are facing a model that rejects two extremes or confronts two extremes: the extremism of American hegemony and arrogance, the extremism of ignorance and negligence in approaching issues and causes. It is as if Hajj Qasim in his school says no to domination and arrogance, and also no to petrification and the rigid mind, especially if it comes with a religious title. Therefore, the school of Hajj Qasim Soleimani has its advantage, in the sense that the military dimension in it is the necessary choice somewhere. But it is not the choice that is placed before humanity, because the origin is how we present our human values. The original understanding of the conflict begins with the understanding that the Americans want to strike at the values and intellectual system of its opponents and exploit the military arena, just as later he exploits the economic arena, and in the coming period he can exploit the cultural arena. Hajj Qasim's school of thought adapts and moves with time and place. So yes, in one of the moments that we went through, it was the first and central necessity to preserve values, identity, and the meanings of dignity and true freedom. Not that of the liberalism style that today is still looking for the meaning of freedom. To preserve all of this, we need to repel the attack, which is apparently military. If the military illusion does not fall within the Western mind, then many of our societies and nations will be crushed, and cultural and intellectual change will begin, as happened in the 60s and 70s at the level of our nation. Therefore, the system and perspective are broad and comprehensive, and at one point in time, the main challenge was to restore identity, as well as to confront the opponent and to clarify the intellectual system. The gateway to that was from the military entrance. Therefore, we cannot talk about Qasim Soleimani, the military man, before we talk about Qasim Soleimani, the human. Qasim Soleimani, who emulates every heart, every mind, and every human experience.
This is what I want to dive on with you in the second segment of our show. Please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about Qasim Soleimani, the human, and how his martyrdom is even more influential than his work as a lieutenant general.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The high level of honesty and sincerity that martyr Haj Qasim Soleimani enjoyed turned him into a model for the aspiring youth in the Islamic world who yearn for the presence of heroes like him. The region of West Asia has witnessed major shifts in favor of the axis of resistance following the martyrdom of Haj Qasim, which is a blessing that came along as a result of Shahid Soleimani's pure blood that was shed 3 years ago. Everyone will leave this world in some way. However, Martyr Soleimani's departure from this world completed the argument against the enemies and all those who witnessed it, making his legacy as a martyr far more dangerous in the enemies' eyes than his role as Lieutenant General and Commander of the Al-Quds Brigades. More in this following report.
Talking about the personality of martyr Commander Qasim Soleimani needs armies of writers specialized in thought, politics, and military. Martyr Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani was more dangerous in his influence than the living Al-Quds Force Commander Qasim Soleimani. This is because his martyrdom combined the military, jihadist, diplomatic, moral, and humanitarian dimensions. We find that Qasim Soleimani, who wears a combat jacket and war helmet, is the same person who delivers medicine, medical materials, and equipment to his economically besieged country. And he's the same person who weeps in front of orphans and walks barefoot in the Ashura rallies every year. Humility and renunciation from this world and its fake fame and glorification were his qualities that immortalized his jihadist and mystical career at the same time. Commander Soleimani is the one who asks in front of his soldiers if he is an example of a righteous man and if they will testify to him upon his death that he is an honest person. Then he instructs his wife that only the word soldier be written on his grave. His pure love for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala led him to martyrdom. This love that differs from worldly belongings of money, children, and prestige. This divine love that brought tears to his eyes whenever he spoke about it, wishing for martyrdom and joining his comrades on the path of jihad. Martyr Soleimani was soft-hearted and merciful even to the enemies, resorting to dialogue and conversation with them before resorting to military confrontation. This moral and emotional personality is the credibility of the holy verse, "Believers are tough on infidels, but merciful among themselves." Today, Commander Soleimani is an international hero who defended honor. Women and children consider him their father, and the Mujahideen take him as an example to follow, embodying titles of heroism, courage, and enthusiasm. Today, he is the leader of hearts, and the Soleimani School is the role model that the resistance youth need in the path of jihad. It is the school of soft power and struggle to attain faith. The martyrdom of Commander Soleimani and leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their companions was not the end of the resistance march, but rather it was a decisive historical juncture separating two phases, which are not alike in events at all. And the witness to that is what is happening today in the country of arrogance in terms of confusion and scandals. Those whom Martyr Soleimani humiliated in the region of West Asia and thwarted their plans of segregation yesterday were celebrating the death of our martyr, claiming that the world will be safer today. But the hand of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is above theirs. And here is history revealing to us how the black magic began to turn against the Western imperial magician. Today, on the third anniversary of the hero's martyrdom, the oppressed in this land renew their covenant with the martyr and chant, "We are all Soleimani."
Now, we are still right here in Beirut with Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic researcher and political commentator. Thank you for still being with us, Dr. Bilal. We need to talk about how writers specialized in thought, in politics, in military, and even in philosophy, they all claimed that Martyr Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani was more dangerous in his influence than the living Al-Quds Force Commander Qasim Soleimani. In what ways do you think that is true?
Naam. بالحقيقة كما كنا نتحدث.
Yes, of course. As we were just talking a little while ago, Qasem Soleimani's school of thought is a jihadi school in the comprehensive sense. Therefore, his school was one that gives, along with the military success, the programming of resistance. Soleimani's school, along with the military victory, gives a culture of liberation and freedom. Therefore, with his martyrdom on the one hand and his work before his martyrdom as well, he was generating a value syndrome along with the military action. His work was not done in the same way that many military experiences are conducted. In reality, his work consisted of building humans. The Soleimani school established with every military victory an intellectual system and the cultural and intellectual school. He did not possess weapons, although he participated in giving weapons for resistance movements. Rather, he gave a mental software and a mind, so that this mind and thought can generate the will, produce weapons to carry out the resistance action. When we say Soleimani's school of thought, what is meant is that it is a school that educates. A school is not a monolithic. A school is not a monolithic act. Schooling is not done in a single dimension. The school is an integrated system that produces a personality whose title and centrality of its work and focus is how to create true liberation and restore all the value system, through which we can reserve status as individuals and as a group. Therefore, I meant by saying that when the enemy thought of assassinating Haj Qasem, I think their analysis was very crusty, superficial, and perhaps even emotional at a certain level. Because the enemy thought that Qasem Soleimani was a brigadier general or a general, like one of the generals of the U.S. Army. Therefore, in practice, they thought of him as a military person who is obsessed with military creativity. The Americans were not aware that Qasem Soleimani is a human being par excellence. And when a person is a human, he becomes an inspiration. This is a focal point to understand. For example, if we say that someone has killed the American president, America will move for political reasons to revenge the killing of its president. But no one will move to defend an American president as an inspiration, role model, or school of thought. America will move from the standpoint of American national security. But when they assassinated Haj Qasem Soleimani, they did not realize that Qasem Soleimani was not just a military hand. He was an example of an inspiring leader. Therefore, his martyrdom was tantamount to igniting all hearts and minds, because somewhere they targeted the aspiration or the model of an entire movement. They targeted something that every individual and every group wanted. Everyone aspires to liberation. Therefore, we saw after the martyrdom of Haj Qasem Soleimani, the wave at the regional level moved in its approach from just bordering the U.S. occupation and hegemony to full confrontation with the Americans. And also at the level of the interior and the internal environment, those who did not know this human leader and did not know what his school produced, somewhere they started to get to know more and more about this school. And they started to be inspired by this school and by this leader. Qasem Soleimani has become a symbol in every home, every child's room, a picture on every teenager's locker, and in every parenting and education center. Whether at the partisan level or the movement level, he became the model and the hero. After his assassination, a new path was opened for the youth to make Haj Qasem Soleimani their aspiration and role model. This is a major shift that might not have happened had it not been for this assassination.
Definitely, which is why on the third anniversary of his martyrdom, we see that the Soleimani school is the role model for the resistance youth, for their need in the path of jihad. Now, it is the school of both soft power and the struggle to attain faith. Is it truly that hard to struggle to attain faith to continue the oath of Sardar Soleimani?
No, I don't think it's difficult, because we are simply talking about the comprehensive personality that succeeded and achieved great success stories in the military field, and then built all the elements of strength. Therefore, when we talk about this school's ability to confront the West in its military strength and succeed in that, we cannot say that this success was purely military. Rather, it was based on a system that enabled Qasem Soleimani to bring about this victory or this success. Therefore, with the same determination, will, mentality, and comprehensive ground for the approach, We can enter into all areas of conflict and make a qualitative difference and achieve success stories. This is what we can say today on the third anniversary of the assassination of Haj Qasem Soleimani. I do not like to divide power into soft power, rough power, and hard power. I do not suppose that this division is correct, because no element of power can be separated. It is all one interacting reality. This one interacting reality has a property. It has taste and flavor. It has a special meaning in our authentic Muhammad Alawi Islamic understanding. This meaning of power and how to turn it into an ability embodied par excellence with the model of Haj Qasem Soleimani, and thus succeeded and was able to bring about the greatest achievement in one of the many fields, which is the military field. And with the same understanding and background, the same comprehensiveness of the approach, and the same understanding of power and how to transform it into ability, it is possible when we enter into other fields, such as the economic field or the novel and narrative field in the next stage, we can also achieve success. Because we do not look with the school and thought of Haj Qasem Soleimani on the issue of jihad as fragmented issues or as isolated issues. But rather, we look at Haj Qasem Soleimani as a school in which the various headings unite. The origin and ground of this school have cultural and intellectual values. Therefore, we stand with the victory brought about by Haj Qasem Soleimani and with the spirit and wave that he founded after his martyrdom. I think we can enter all the remaining fields and achieve great victories and success stories in them. This is what we are seeing today. Haj Qasem Soleimani built planning as an asset in achieving success and achievement. In 1898, the Jewish Zionists met one day to set up the establishment of the Zionist entity. And after 40 or 50 years in 1948, they succeeded, with international sponsorship and international embrace, in establishing the Zionist entity. But regarding the school of Qasem Soleimani, which was a school of Imam Khomeini, we notice from the first moment of Imam Khomeini's revolution until today, after 44 years, we stand and ask, what has become of Israel? So this mind and this school were able to establish during 44 years of planning and thinking. And this is something new because it reflects a system of values and is not a random military action or a military action as per the ISIS approach. Planning got us to this day. After 44 years, we find that Israel suffers not only at the level of region, but at the level of its heart, that is, in the lands of Palestine 48 and 67. So Qasem Soleimani's school taught us software resistance, taught us how to think, taught us will, determination, planning, understanding arenas, and understanding weaknesses. The field of defiance remains with its weapons, which we can prepare for the fight according to the nature of the field.
Dr. Bilal Laqis, academic researcher and political commentator, it's been an honor, it's been a joy, and it's been definitely one of the most educative episodes about Qasem Soleimani that we have done so far. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your contribution to this very special show. And to you, ladies and gents, we tell you, we are all Qasem Soleimani. On the third anniversary of Haj Qasem Soleimani and his brother and companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their friends who were killed in broad daylight, despite the fact that it was nighttime, but it was in the broad daylight of media, seeing it, watching it, even taking photos of it as it happens. You have not killed Soleimani. You have brought Soleimani into our own insights, our own mental system, our own programming as humans with values. This is why Soleimani will stay with us and will further become the hero of the generations to come. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
The limelight.
Most Britons now think that Brexit was wrong. According to a new poll published by the British publication The Independent, more than two-thirds of Britons want a vote on rejoining the EU. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, most UK citizens believe their country is facing worse than it was as an EU member, as Savanta survey shows. More than two-thirds of Britons want a vote on rejoining the EU, according to a new poll published by The Independent recently. More than half of respondents described the decision to leave the bloc as wrong. The UK officially quit the EU on January 31st, 2020, following the 2016 Brexit referendum, with the Leave vote winning by a slim margin. The survey conducted for the newspaper by the research company Savanta showed 65% of respondents want a new vote, 10% more than last year. The public, however, are divided over when such a referendum should take place, with 22% saying it should be held now and 24% believing it should happen within the next 5 years. Less popular opinions are within next, that is 6 to 10 years, 11%, and in more than 20 years, 4%. Meanwhile, the number of those opposing a second vote on EU membership has declined from 32% to 40%.